I want to challenge us this morning and challenge us deeply to examine ourselves. The Bible speaks of, and I know what it's talking about is not necessarily what we're going to discuss this morning, but it was what triggered the thought in my mind. So, the Bible speaks of the fact that we should walk by the same rule. Let us walk by the same rule. Well, and I know that in practice in the church, that has a lot to do with the doctrine that the church practices and teaches. But in our private lives, we need to walk by the same rule as well. We all should have a rule of behavior, a rule of morals, a moral law of sorts, a rule of ethics, that we should practice in our daily lives. And if we're Bible believers, it should be the same rule. Because God has given us rules for how to live our lives. Now that doesn't mean that everything that we do in life is going to be exactly the same. We're not talking about interests and opinions and likes and dislikes and those kinds of things. We're talking about rules of behavior. So what rule should it be? There are many different rules of behavior that people live by. I want us to quickly examine a few of those that people live by and then focus in on the one that I believe Jesus teaches us we should live by. One of the most common of rules that people live by, sometimes it's referred to as the iron rule, but it's might makes right. Whoever is the strongest gets to decide what's okay to do. If you're the strongest, that seems like a really good rule because you get to control everything. If you're best friends with the strongest, that seems like a pretty good rule because your friend who's the strongest gives you all sorts of benefits because of the strength and the ability to make other people do whatever they want them to do. But, of course, if you're not a friend of that strong one, then you're going to be in trouble. You're going to be picked on and bullied, or you're going to be persecuted or kicked out or put to death or whatever else they decide should be done to those who are not as strong. That's not a very good rule. It winds up being a rule that only brings pain and suffering to a lot of people. This is the kind of rule that many nations in our world are run by. And that's one of the reasons that there's so much suffering in our world today. Because the leader, we can't even really call him a leader, but a dictator, an authoritarian person who's in charge and rules with the military, and if you don't do what they say, if you don't like what they say, then they send the army out in the middle of the night to arrest you and throw you in jail and you disappear, and your neighbors, they kind of have an idea of what happened to you. And so they quiet down, they don't say anything. And a lot of nations are run that way. When you hear about a nation where a, quote, president is elected with 99% of the vote, you can be pretty sure that that's the kind of government that runs that nation. I don't think there's ever been a time in this country, even from the founding, when most people agreed, well, let's let George Washington be the first president. Even from that time, I don't think 99% of the people voted for him. It was probably maybe 65, 70%, something like that. But, boy, if 99% of the people... No, that just doesn't happen. That just doesn't happen. And so when we see those kinds of things or hear those reports about here this leader was elected with 99% of the vote or 98% of the vote, we know that's a fraud. We know that's not real. Those people are either being coerced into voting that way, or else those votes just aren't being taken into account at all. But many times those people are just too scared to vote any other way. If they vote another way and it's found out they voted another way, they're going to be killed. So that idea that might makes right is not true, because sometimes the wicked person is the strongest person. That's often the case. In Proverbs, Solomon talks about how the people rejoice when the righteous rule, but there is sorrow when the wicked reign. Sometimes the wicked come into power. Well, that doesn't make it right, just because they're in a position of power. So the idea that might makes right, we have to reject that one. And then there is the rule that goes somewhat similar to that one that says, he who has the gold makes the rules. Whoever's wealthiest, whoever can afford to spend the money, well, they get to make up all the rules. Well, that one some people like. Wealthy people like that one. Poor people, not so much. People who have to work for those wealthy people may not appreciate the rules that that rich person puts on them in order for them to get what little bit they give them. Sometimes that wealth corrupts. It causes people to become more and more covetous, more and more greedy, to want more and more. The desire for wealth is a desire that can never be satiated by more wealth. If somebody has $10, they want 20. If somebody has $20, they want 40. If they have 40, they want 80. If they have 1,000, they want 2,000. If they have 10,000, they want 20,000. If they have 100,000, they want 500,000. And it just goes on and on. There's no end to it. Because no matter how much money someone has, there's always more money out there and they want it. And if our desire is to reach for that goal of having that wealth, then we're going to be miserable striving after it. We will never be content. We will never find comfort, because there is not enough money in the world to bring happiness and contentment. The story is told about the man who had a field. He offered to give it to the first person who came up to him who was content, truly content. Well, as you can guess, many people applied to get that field. They wanted the money that would come with that field. They wanted the resources that that field would offer. And as each one came before him and proclaimed why he should give them the field, in each case he simply said, if you were content, you wouldn't be asking for the field. If you were content, you wouldn't want it. You wouldn't feel like you needed it, because you would be content with what you already have. But he taught a lesson in that. The people realize that contentment really is harder to attain than we think. Sometimes we think that we are content, but often we're not. Often we're looking for more. Now obviously, when it comes to wealth, we have to have a certain amount of money to survive. You can't just go to the power company and say, well, I'm a good person, so give me electricity for the month. You can't go to the grocery store and say, well, I'm happy, so can I have my food for the week? It doesn't work that way. We do have to have money in order to buy the things that we need for this physical life. But we need to remember that this physical life is not all there is. And if our entire being is wrapped up in this physical world and in the money that makes the world go round, as they say, then we may miss out on the greater treasures, the treasures that should be being laid up in heaven. But we've got to be careful of that idea that, well, if somebody's got the money, then they must be a good person, or they must be right when they say something or when they do something. And that, too, has been a way that many things have been run throughout the years. And in fact, many politicians in many countries have been influenced by who could give them the biggest bribe, in essence. And many countries are today being run that way. But then some live by another rule. Their rule is to do unto others before they do unto me. Before they get a chance to mistreat me or to cheat me or to lie to me or whatever the case may be, I'm going to do it to them. I'm going to get them first. This is one of the most pessimistic ways of looking at life. It assumes that everyone is out to get you. And since everyone is out to get me, then I better just go out there and get them first. But a lot of people live by this rule. A lot of people will say something cruel to you just before they think you're going to say something cruel to them. A lot of people will catch you and attack you in one way or another because they're afraid that you might do it to them. A lot of people will cheat you out of a dollar because they just know that if the situation were reversed, you'd cheat them out of that dollar. So a lot of people live by this rule. I'm gonna do it to somebody else before they get the chance to do it to me. Of course, this is certainly not a good way for us to live our lives. Certainly not what Christ would advise us to do and not what Christ taught us to do. But it is a way that a lot of people live. A lot of people that we know. Now, they may not live every single day in every action that they take in this way. But if you talk to them, that's the opinion that they express. Well, you got to get them because they're going to get you. They're going to cheat you. They're going to mistreat you. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. So you better watch your back because they're out to get you. They're a little paranoid, I guess, in a lot of ways. Well, are there people out there who will cheat you if they get the chance? Sure. Are there people out there who will get you if you're not watching? Yes, there are. But just because somebody else would be willing to cheat me, does that give me the right to cheat them? Well, it certainly doesn't in God's book. But in some men's book, that's the way it works. If they would have done it to me, so it's okay for me to do it to them. Then there are others who live by the Samson rule, to do unto others as they have done unto you. To do the same thing to them. Of course, this is the kind of rule, like the one before it, that simply escalates problems. It brings problems on. A lot of people who live by that rule to do before others as do to you, or this one to do to others as you'd have them doing to you, bad things happen to them. And, of course, they use those bad things that happen to them to justify, well, see there, I told you. So they go and rob and steal and kill, and then they're robbed and killed or you know, whatever the case may be, they're victims. They're just victims. Those poor, innocent people. There's a story in the news the other day. Young man, college football player, I guess, late, about 2 o'clock in the morning, on a Saturday morning or Sunday morning one, he was at a bar. Fight broke out. Police showed up. He goes to get in his car to leave. Obviously, he knows if he gets caught there, he's probably going to lose his spot on the football team or some other disciplinary action. So he's going to leave. Well, the policeman comes to his car and knocks on the window to try to get him to stop. Well, he decides to run instead, and he drags the policeman along with him, crashing into a couple other cars with the police with him. And finally, in the process of all of this, he winds up being shot and killed as he's trying to flee the scene of this bar, where at first the worst thing that would have happened to him probably would have been, you know, maybe a suspension from the football team, maybe getting kicked out of school. That's bad enough, but he escalated the problem. Tried to run. He wound up being shot and killed by the police. They interviewed his friends. Oh, those bad, bad policemen. How could they do such a thing to such a sweet, sweet, wonderful young man? Why is it always the policeman's fault? Now, I'm not saying that it never is. I know there are some policemen out there that break the law and do things they shouldn't do as well. But, you know, why is it if we would do what's right, we could avoid so much of the problems, so many of the problems that we face in life. But do unto others as they would do unto you. Judges chapter 15 and verses 10 and 11. This was the idea. The Philistines had come up to Judah to try to catch Samson. This is after Samson had already been fighting with them a little bit. He had burned up some of their crops. They had killed his father-in-law and wife, or what should have been his wife, that his father-in-law had given to someone else. He had killed some of them to give clothing to the ones that had been at his marriage feast. And they'd been going back and forth for a while already. As they say, one good turn deserves another. Well, in this case, one bad turn got another. But verse 10, the Jews then asked the Philistines why they had come. And they said, "We came to bind Samson to do to him as he has done to us." See, this was the rule they lived by. Well, he did bad things to us, so we don't go and do bad things to him. Well, look at verse 11 then. 3,000 of the men of Judah went up to the rock Etam and said to Samson, "Don't you know the Philistines are rulers over us? What is this that you have done to us?" And he said to them, "As they did unto me, so have I done unto them." He said, "I just did to them what they did to me." And they said, "We're just going to do to him what he did to us." That didn't work out too well for either one of those. Either for Samson or for the Philistines, did it. Nobody really prospers from that kind of an attitude. The Philistines wound up with thousands of people dead as a result of doing to Samson as he did to them. Samson himself wound up with his eyes gouged out and a prisoner before he brought the temple down and killed himself along with the others in that situation. Not exactly a pleasant situation, is it? And yet that is the method that many use to determine how they're going to live their lives. Well, what did somebody else do to me? You know, often we hear a lot about bullying. Most of the time when there's a bully, probably 99 times out of 100, the person who's a bully is a bully because they were bullied by somebody else. Now, it may have been that the fourth grader got bullied by the sixth grader, and so they're bullying the second graders. Or it might be that they got bullied at home and picked on and mistreated at home, and so they're not big enough to take it out on daddy, so they're going to take it out on their little friends at school, or, well, I guess they're not friends, but the other children at school or whatever. And the same thing goes on as we become adults. Maybe somebody is bullied on the job, and so they go home and they bully their wife and kids because they can't speak up at work, or they wind up losing their job or whatever, and so they go pick on somebody else. This is such a common thing. Just doing to others as they've done unto me. I'm just going to do the same thing. Well, part of that is that we learn by example, children especially. If children get treated this way and they watch TV shows where people treat each other this way, they're going to learn to treat each other that way. That shouldn't be surprising to us. Then we want to look at one more before we get to Jesus' rule for our lives. This one is better than the others, but it's still insufficient. This is the rule that says, in essence, I won't do anything bad to anybody else. I won't hurt anybody. It's kind of the do no harm. Well, I'm not going to hurt them. I'm not going to hit them. I'm not going to steal from them. I'm not going to do anything mean to them. And that one sounds pretty good. We would certainly rather that somebody follow that rule than some of the others that we've talked about this morning. But it's not enough. Matthew chapter 25, verses 41 through 43, Jesus addresses this very idea. Notice what he says. In verse 41, this is the scene of the judgment, and he has divided to the right and to the left, the sheep from the goats, so to speak. And he says to those on his left hand, "Depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels." So these people, boy, they must have been some wicked people. They must have been some of those who have been cheating before you cheated them, huh? No. That's not the people he's talking to here. Oh, I'm sure those folks are going to be on the left hand. But these particular ones are a different group. Listen to what he says from in verse 42. "For I was hungry, and you didn't give me anything to eat. I was thirsty, and you didn't give me anything to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not take me in. I was naked, and you didn't clothe me. Sick, and in prison, and you didn't visit me." See, this is where Jesus really gets most of us. Because most of us know that those first few ways of living are not right. And we may occasionally act that way, but we know that we didn't do right when we act that way. We know better. And hopefully we feel bad about it and repent of it when we do act that way. But there are a lot of people, a lot of Christian people, who believe that as long as I don't hurt anybody, then I'm okay with God. I'm doing what God wants me to do. And notice these folks that Jesus is talking to here, they didn't hurt anybody. They didn't throw the people in prison. They didn't make the people sick. They didn't steal their clothes away from them so they were naked. They didn't take away their water so they were thirsty. They didn't steal their food so that they were hungry. They didn't do any of those bad things. And yet they were on the left hand and they were going to depart from God forever. See, this is the way a lot of us live our lives. Well, I'm going to mind my own business, and I'm just not going to hurt anybody. You know, I'm not going to steal anything from you. I'm not going to hurt you. I'm not going to hit you or beat you or anything like that. Maybe on a good day, I'm not even going to touch you. I'm not going to do any of those things to you. But that's not good enough, because these folks, even though they didn't do any of those bad things, according to Jesus, the problem was not what they didn't not do. Did we use that many negatives in a sentence? Probably not. But it wasn't the fact that they didn't do the bad things, it was the fact that they didn't do the good things. They didn't do what could have been done to help the situation. This is very important, because this is the kind of difference in what Jesus teaches us to do and in the kind of philosophy that allowed Hitler to do what he did in Germany, or allowed the kinds of things to go on that have gone on in other parts of the world and even in this country, when wickedness has occurred and nobody did anything. Read about and hear about, not so much recently, and maybe it's just become so common they quit reporting on it, but maybe things are a little better now than they used to be. But I can remember hearing about in Chicago and New York City, and I would say, well, it never happened here, but it probably happened in small rural towns too. Maybe it just wasn't as many people around to see something like that happen. But you know, there were, a woman would be raped and be screaming for help, and people would just close their windows so they couldn't hear her screaming. Wouldn't even call the police. Just shut the windows so we wouldn't hear her screaming. That somebody could be murdered dying, bleeding on the sidewalk, and people just step over them and keep walking. They've been bugged and beaten and stabbed, and they just step over and keep walking. Just, it's not any of my business. I don't want to get involved. We said, well, I'd never do something like that. Oh, but we have. Maybe not something that obvious, but we have. We have ignored someone else's pain and suffering because it would make us uncomfortable. And we didn't cause their pain and suffering, but we also haven't done anything to alleviate it. Notice what he says to these folks. You depart from me, you cursed into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels, because I was hungry and you didn't give me anything to eat. I think there are some hungry people in the United States. I'm sure there are. Oh, they may not, maybe you don't know about it, who it is exactly, but I'm sure there are hungry people. I was thirsty, you didn't give me anything to drink. I was a stranger and you didn't take me in. I was naked and you didn't clothe me. I was sick and in prison and you didn't visit me. Some of those simple things. When somebody's sick, do we do anything? Or we just, we don't want to get involved with that. Makes me uncomfortable. I don't want to see that. They're sick. I don't want to be around it. I might catch something. Or, any number of things that we might come up with as excuses to justify why I'm not doing it. But Jesus doesn't accept those excuses. He says, simply living a life of not hurting people, of minding your own business, keeping your head down, tending to your own, and ignoring the other rest of the world around you is not good enough. Jesus gives us a rule to live by. We often call it a golden rule, but we don't live by it many times. Oh, sometimes we do. When it works for us, we'll use it. We teach it to little children, even in the school systems where they can no longer talk about the Bible, they still teach those children the golden rule. They still teach them that rule. They don't tell them where it comes from. They don't tell them Jesus said that. They don't tell them that it's a Christian rule. Because, I'm going to say it, there is no other religion that teaches this rule. There are several that may teach the other don't hurt anybody, don't be mean to anybody. Yes, there are some that may teach that, but there is no other religion in this world that really teaches this. Now, just because us as Christians don't always practice it, doesn't mean that Christ didn't teach it. It just means that we're not living up to the standards he set. We're not living by the same rule that he expects us to walk by. Notice in Luke chapter 6. Look at the verse 27. But I say unto you with tears, love your enemies. Do good to them which hate you, bless them that curse you, and pray for them which despitefully use you. And not to him that smiteth thee on the one cheek, offer also the other. And him that takes away your coat, forbid not to take your coat also. Give to every man that asks of you, and the sin that takes away your good, ask them not again. And if ye will that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise. For if you love them which love you, what thanks have you? So sinners also love those that love them. If you do good to them which do good to you, what thanks have you? For sinners also do even the same. If you live to them a good you hope to receive, then what thanks have you? For sinners also do sinners to receive as much again. But love your enemies and do good and let them both get for nothing again. And your reward shall be great, and we shall be the children of the highest. He is kind unto the unthankful and to the evil. Because that's what merciful is your father also is never truthful. Is it like that? Is it like that? But if it's many, many times it's not about that, but I had the opportunity to live up to that and didn't do it. And then, taking opportunity to live that up to do it with a new book. And do it. But we have to get really good enough to do it at the time. But it isn't do it. And those are really good enough. Jesus doubled the study of the people of these things that have set up and what have we been doing to do. He just tells us to do it. He tells us this is the way to live on it. And fortunately, we don't have to live on it, but that way, because we think it will make us very weak. And it makes them. Some people will take kindness for the sign of weakness. But of course, you can do it. We're not trying to please, we're not trying to please. Matthew chapter 7, verses 7 through 12, the same. The Lord is a little bit of which he will set up. He says, the next gift shall be given to you. Seek the nature of God, and not the nature of the open to you. For the Lord is one of the head of the tree, which is a tree of the heaven, and given the heart of the shall be open. What man is the Lord of you, who has his son has bread, and his son has stone? For he has the spirit to have given a scripture. If you think you be with it, not how we get it good against you, but how about the forage of your stomach with the dead nothing that is to be directed? Therefore, I put the dead into what will ever be good as the dead to do to you, do to be even a scripture, to the dead for the dead to be not with the prophets. This is the dead to the clear, and what is the dead to be? Two different sermons, and two different concepts, but in both concepts, he said it. He doesn't want it. If you would have got on it, contribute to the people who get it, and you need to contribute to the others who get it. If you would have got on it, contributing to others who get it, then you think that the others are going to step it or the division. If you would have stepped on the division, you might have to step on the division, then you would have stepped on the division.
Thank you. Thank you.